Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
And along the way, I learned that Mary Kay had this desire to visit Africa. Women of the ELCA put out a periodic newsletter called The Interchange, and right on the front page was this trip to Liberia. So I gave it to Mary Kay. I wasn't going. It wasn't on my bucket list. We left on November 30th and arrived December 1st, 28 hours later.
It safely could be called a life-changing experience. To go to Liberia.
And like Mary Kay, I mean, it has touched my heart and it has changed my life, and I will never be the same again.
We were treated as sort of dignitaries when we came. We met with the top people in the country.
Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's office. And
just so, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is the president of Liberia, a woman president, and we had an hour visit with her. Different leaders of different departments, the bishop. We met with Lemay Gbawi, who received a Peace Prize. And we learned so much about the struggles that this country had gone through and the the power of the women.
And when we got off the plane, and you know, you got through customs,
must have been 20 women?
At least 20, and they were all singing and dancing, and they had a song, Welcome to Liberia. It was just awesome.
In the process of getting ready for this trip, we got an email from Valora Starr, who was coordinating the trip from Churchwide, and she said the women wanted to make us all dresses. So would we send our measurements?
Okay.
So all of us had these green dresses.
We walk into the church, and every woman in there has the same dress with the red. And this is a very, very large church.
There had to be 600 people in that church.
It was unbelievable.
And Valora said to us as we were getting ready to leave, she says, now, if you're thinking about your church at home in 45 minutes, slam bang, and we're out of here, she said, take a deep breath. Church was 2.5 hours. So then on Tuesday, we got in the van, and we headed up country to Phoebe. And along the way, I mean, there were these groups of women every place. And then we arrived at Phoebe, and there was a group of them waiting outside along the road as we moved into the compound at Phoebe. And we spent 2 days at Phoebe. The area that they serve is over 400,000 people. So, I mean, it's a huge area. But people have to sometimes walk for days. People don't have vehicles.
During our meeting with the doctor, we were talking about general finances, and they talked about energy costs, and they were using diesel fuel in order to get their electricity, and it was costing them $45,000 a month.
There's some grid in Monrovia, but as you get to rural areas, that's another thing that was destroyed. Where it existed, it was destroyed during the war.
Later on in the trip, we went up to a beautiful waterfall. They were talking about taking that out and building a dam for hydroelectric power, and we said, oh, what a shame that would be. But we understood their need for power. We just said there was sunlight every day. There was all this sunlight, and they needed something, and we needed to do solar power. It just makes sense.
You know, I kept thinking of my mother's whispering in my ear, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
And I see this project as impacting the entire country. You know, we have a chance now to impact 400,000 people.
It's made me look at things differently than I might have before I could put names and faces together. I'm going to cry.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
This is really good. So this is a black activist, I would say an activist who happens to be black, by the name of Bob Woodson, on the Dr. Phil show, talking about what has happened in the black community and how it relates to basically everything we're talking about here today.
You say you don't support reparations. Why not?
Not everybody suffered equally. I mean, when you go into slavery, it's much more complex than are white people were the oppressors and black people were the victims. If you dissect it, you will find there were about 3,700 free blacks who owned 12,000 slaves, black slaves. The question is, do the descendants of those free blacks who owned black slaves, do they pay? Blacks really benefited more the first 100 years after slavery we have in the last 50 years. I was born in 1937 during the Depression. Everyone in my small, low-income black community, 98% of the households had a man and a woman raising children. Elderly people could walk safely in that community without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. Never heard of gunfire during that time. Never heard of a child being shot to death in the crib. But there are 50 children today who have been shot and killed in our cities. If you're talking about remedies, we've got to look beyond saying that every solution has to have a winner and a loser, that blacks can only benefit if whites lose. We have to be defined more than just victims of oppression. When whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best. When we were denied access to hotels, we built our own. We have to communicate to our people the history of how they achieved in the face of oppression. But if we continue to sit back and say all of the challenges that we face in out of wedlock birth, the violence, that somehow the control of that is in the hands of white America, and therefore until white people change, there's nothing that we can do. This sets up a terrible situation for this nation. The big crisis facing America is not racial. It is the moral and spiritual freefall that is consuming our children. The highest death rate among black families is homicide. Among Silicon Valley, the highest level of suicide, 6 times the national average. In Appalachia, there are prescription drugs. And so if we are to address this crisis that is causing our children to lack a sense of personal responsibility or value for their own life, they will take their own life or take someone else's. So in order to address that, we must come together and look beyond race and realize America is drowning because it's in a moral and spiritual freefall. None of us should be defined by the worst of what we were in the past, but we should be defined by what we want to become in the future, and that people are motivated to change when you give them a vision of victories that are possible, not constantly reminding them of injuries to be avoided.
What makes more sense? What that man is saying, or what you hear out of Lori Lightfoot, Pete Buttigieg, or Joe Biden?
All right, today's podcast is, and I ran across that audio, so I said, well, let me switch things up for, you know, it's Friday, and talk about this from a different, this topic from a different aspect. So Reparations 2023, now we're referring to it here in the United States, particularly towards a specific demographic market, and I'll give some examples here in a minute, but we'll be back right after this. All right, today, this is a jump-off topic. Reparations 2023. I ran across, somebody sent me a text yesterday from Dr. Phil's show, Dr. Phil on TV. And it was a panel, I guess a de facto panel on reparations. So I said, well, I'll bite, I'll listen to it. So here's one clip of it, one audio clip of Bob Johnson. Bob Johnson is probably the very first person that I interviewed when I used to do radio. This was before the word podcast wasn't even invented. This is somewhere like 87, 88, somewhere around there. No, 80, 86, 87, 88, somewhere around those years. Up in D.C. He might not even remember my name. Might remember me on site, but because he was in actually, and we were in a physical radio studio back then. And like I say, the word podcast and smartphones weren't available, and at least not in this country at the time. But anyway, so let me play this audio that sparked the inspiration for today's live stream.
This is really good. So this is a black activist, I would say an activist who happens to be black, by the name of Bob Woodson on the Dr. Phil show, talking about what has happened in the black community and how it relates to basically everything we're talking about here today.
You say you don't support reparations. Why not?
Not everybody suffered equally. I mean, when you go into slavery, it's much more complex than are white people were the oppressors and black people were the victims. If you dissect it, you will find there were about 3,700 free blacks who owned 12,000 slaves, black slaves. The question is, do the descendants of those free blacks who owned black slaves, do they pay? Blacks really benefited more the first 100 years after slavery than we have in the last 50 years. I was born in 1937 during the Depression. Everyone in my small, low-income black community, 98% of the households had a man and a woman raising children. Elderly people could walk safely in that community without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. Never heard of gunfire during that time. Never heard of a child being shot to death in the crib. But there are 50 children today who have been shot and killed in our cities. If you're talking about remedies, we've got to look beyond saying that every solution has to have a winner and a loser, that blacks can only benefit if whites lose. We have to be defined more than just victims of oppression. When whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best. When we were denied access to hotels, we built our own. We have to communicate to our people the history of how they achieved in the face of oppression. But if we continue to sit back and say all of the challenges that we face in out of wedlock versus the violence, that somehow the control of that is in the hands of white America, and therefore until white people change, there's nothing that we can do. This sets up a terrible situation for this nation. The big crisis facing America is not racial. It is the moral and spiritual freefall that is consuming our children. The highest death rate among black families is homicide. Among Silicon Valley, the highest level of suicide, 6 times the national average. In Appalachia, the prescription drugs. And so if we are to address this crisis that is causing our children to lack a sense of personal responsibility or value for their own life, they will take their own life or take someone else's. So in order to address that, we must come together and look beyond race and realize America is drowning because it's in a moral and spiritual freefall. None of us should be defined by the worst of what we were in the past, but we should be defined by what we want to become in the future, and that people are motivated to change when you give them a vision of victories that are possible, not constantly reminding them of injuries to be avoided.
What makes more sense? What that man is saying, or what you hear out of Lori Lightfoot or Pete Buttigieg or Joe Biden,
now it finally stopped. Okay, so taking off from Bob Johnson, and once again, the narrator did say, because this is the audio, and you can find the clip on YouTube. So for the visual, Bob Johnson's a black man, and I agree with him. I agree with him. Matter of fact, and reparations is such a broad topic, but I'm speaking about reparations as it relates to black folk in the United States or African American or what the people that are called African American or ADOs, African descendants of African American descendants of slaves or whatever, how it goes. I'm going to, and once again, the word reparations basically means repair. In order for something to get repaired, you first had to prove injury. You had to go to law school on this one. So, number one, you need to prove in 2023 how you were injured. And you need to prove that. You need the evidence based on something that happened 100, 200 years ago, 200 plus years ago. That's the first thing. All right. Now, if you have proved injury of how you were injured in 2023 by something that happened 200, 300, 400 years ago, if you can prove that, with solid forensic evidence that'll hold up in court, all right, you're not going to find any case law on the books at the current time. But then there are remedies, okay? Now, you can look for remedies on the – and let's put this, because a lot of people, when they bring up reparations, they bring the government into it. So – Some people are looking for remedies from the federal government. Good luck with that one, because the United States of America did not exist. I mean, before it did exist, you did have slavery was perfectly legal in what we now call the United States. And if you recall, on July 4th, 1776, you know, the 13 colonies became the first 13 states. Therefore, Alabama, Mississippi, California, Illinois, that wasn't the United States back then. All right, so and then some people are looking for it on the local level, like Asheville, North Carolina. They're discussions among their local city government politicians, you know, the city council and the mayor's office, you know, they're discussing the possibility of some type of reparations for that city. I don't think it'll be based on slavery, though. And it's a city in not too far from Chicago. It's right on the tip of my tongue. They've passed a reparations bill locally for that city, but it's not based on slavery whatsoever. Okay. California, you got some activists out there. They're trying to get something done on the state level, which is wild because California, which was originally Mexico, which morphed into California territory, which morphed into the state of California, California never had a slave state. Matter of fact, you had escaped slaves or people who moved to California and they who were legally slaves in another state who became free in California. All right, so, but now with that said, there's, you know, so there are also remedies, and once again, I just say, you know, some people might be looking for it on a local city government level. I don't hear any talk about, well, California, some people looking for it on a state level. And then, of course, a bunch of people are looking for it from the United States government. Now, but there are more than those three flavors, all right, when it comes to remedies. And that would be what I would say self-remedies. Just like if you cut, you know, you handle a piece of paper and you cut your finger on it, is there really a need to go to the emergency room, outside source? You know, you can go into your medicine cabinet and get a Band-Aid, and that's a self-remedy. That's what Band-Aids are. If you have a headache, do you really need to go to the hospital, the emergency room, you know, because you got a headache? Well, no, if you get yourself a bottle of aspirin from the drugstore or what have you, then you can pop in one or two tablets. That's a self-remedy. So when it comes to reparations, at least the way I see it, there are many self-remedies. So I'm going to reel off 21 self-remedies that have actually worked, that are all documented, and here we go. Paul Cuffey, and that's C-U-F-F-I-E-E. Paul Cuffey was a black man during the colonial era of the United States. He was lived in Massachusetts. He was a shipbuilder. That was his living. He built ships. Not as a slave, but as an entrepreneur. And Paul Cuffey made probably the first successful back-to-Africa voyage from Massachusetts to what we now call Sierra Leone, and he helped organize that country as well. It was a collaborative effort between him, other black folk, and other British people. White folks up with that too. So, but that's Paul Cuffey. The next one out of here, Liberia. Former slaves who obtained freedom through manumissions mostly, and a lot of them did it by buying out their master in many cases. They put their money together. They practiced cooperative economics. They Liberia. And they bought maybe what, and we'll figure out the square, I mean, how many acres of land they bought. But they bought a whole bunch of acres, okay, and formed their own country. Now, I would say that's the second successful back-to-Africa trip in the formation of Liberia. All right. And mind you, they didn't get anything from the government. Paul Covey didn't get anything from the government. You know, nobody from the former slaves that went over to Liberia and formed that country, they didn't get anything from the government. All right. And let's go to the third one, the Republic of Maryland. Some of you have heard of it, some of you haven't, but it's documented. That was, I would call, the third successful back-to-Africa trip. All right. Then there was also Mississippi, a group of former slaves or slaves working on getting free, organized Mississippi in Africa and Kentucky in Africa. And they went over to Africa, also purchased land, and, you know, all that's in, I think they've merged into Liberia these days. Then coming back over here to the States, Bridget Biddy Mason, who was born a slave, and then a master, or legal master, because slave is basically a legal description. They moved out to California, and she got her freedom in California. She was a midwife, a herbalist. She can also take care. She was a de facto veterinarian. But her main bread and butter, her main hustle, was she was a midwife. She delivered a whole bunch of babies during her lifetime. She also became a real estate tycoon in California, one of the first. Here's a woman who was born a slave. Annie Malone, who was a millionaire before she taught Madam C.J. Walker, formerly known as Madam, what was her name? Sarah Breedlove, as well as other black women, on how they can become rich. Annie Malone was a black woman who made other black women, and probably some black men, but definitely other black women, she taught them how to become millionaires. This happened during the Jim Crow era. All right. Another person, Mother Priscilla Baltimore, she was born a slave, but she got her money together and went from the slave state of Missouri over to Illinois and started her own, what they call Freedom Village. And that's known today as Brooklyn, Illinois, still standing. Next person, the actual documented first black person, also born a slave, but he later went to Illinois as well, bought about 80 acres of land from a slave owner capacity. Okay, and that abolishes the myth that many slaves were paid for their work. Let's just establish that right there. Not all, but many. Frank McWhorter was one of them. He took his savings after he got free, legally free. He wasn't on the run or nothing like that. He wasn't a runaway slave. He got legally free in one state, went to Illinois, bought 80 acres of land, and started New Philadelphia, Illinois, which is now a ghost town. But the fact that he went, bought 80 acres of land, he developed an integrated town. Anybody can live there of any race or color, all right? And he became mayor. So if we ever write a book about him, another podcast about him, is From Slave to Millionaire, because that's what Free Franklin, and this is all documented, that's what he did. 10, at its peak, there were 1,400 black townships in the United States. At its peak, there's probably anywhere from 700 to maybe 900 black townships that exist right now in the United States in 2023. Number 11, and we're going to 21. I'm naming, these are remedies. These are DIY, do-it-yourself remedies that have already successfully been done. Now, here's one at number 11, and we had these ladies on here about 4 months ago. The Freedom Georgia Initiative. Three black women ran across 97 acres of land 2 hours outside of Atlanta. They recruited 19 other black families to take a visit to this place. They bought the 97 acres of land. 4 months ago, they were up to 502 acres. They're starting their own town, and it's 2023 now, called Freedom Georgia. That's something that they're doing right now. All right. About a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had right here and another interview, Pastor Roland Slade, Pastor Meridian of Southern Baptist Church in El Cajon, California. With the church, they built a six-unit tiny house village. I imagine you're going to put more people on that. As time goes by, 45 minutes from where I'm at, Eatonville, Florida, which is over 100 years old. Started by, it's right on the tip of my tongue. But it's 6 miles outside of Orlando, still around today. Mount Bayou, Mississippi was also founded by, now I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Mount Bayou. Highland Beach, Maryland was founded by, I think, one of the sons of Frederick Douglass and his wife, Laura Douglass. They were refused from a hotel because of race at the time. Let's say this happened during the Jim Crow era. Now, let's say they were injured. Not physically, but due to the fact that they could not get a hotel room because they were a black couple somewhere in the state of Maryland because they were black and they got their feelings hurt, okay? And let's call getting their feelings hurt an injury, all right? Now, what they did, what they did was, just like I gave the example, if you cut your finger on a piece of paper, get a paper cut, do you go to the emergency, that's the injury, do you go to the emergency room to get it checked out, or do you go in your medicine cabinet and get a Band-Aid? It's a self-remedy. So what Laura Douglass and her husband did, she was the daughter-in-law of Frederick Douglass. I can't remember her husband's name at the top of my head. But what they did was they went to Anne Arundel County, Maryland, and they bought, 40 or 50 acres of land. They didn't get nothing from the government. Didn't get nothing from the state of Maryland. They didn't get nothing from the local government, nor did they ask. Reverend Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, they weren't even born yet. Martin Luther King wasn't even a thought yet. Okay. So they bought their own 40 or 50 acres of land, called the town. They started their own town with their own accommodations. All right. And it's still, I've been there at least twice, if not three times. Highland Beach, Maryland. That is an example of a self-remedy of reparations, according to my definition of the way I look at reparations, okay? But, hey, good luck waiting on the government, the federal government. Let me know how that turns out for you, for those who want it from the federal government. Even the local governments, let me know how that works out for you. All right, let's see. Another example. Now, these towns and these nations are examples of group economics, okay? On an individual level, the wealthiest man in the world happens to be an African man out of Nigeria, Aliko Dangote. He's first-generation billionaire. There's stories about the Maroons. You know, when the slave ships did hit the shores in the Western Hemisphere, there were many slave revolts. The ones who escaped were known as Maroons, and many Maroons started their own little villages and little towns that morphed into towns, some of which are still living. One interesting figure from the Jamaican culture is Queen Nanny. Look it up, Queen Nanny Jamaica. She's got a pretty interesting story. Something I covered either earlier this week or last week, Isaac Wright Jr., and he's living today. There's a TV show on Hulu based on his life called For Life. He was injured. He was arrested on the drug kingpin charge in New York State, given a life sentence plus some years on top of that. He didn't waste his time. He was incarcerated for 9.5 years. In that time, he went to law school, passed law school, graduated from law school, passed the bar, started representing inmates at the prison where he was at. Now he's a free man. He also ran for mayor of New York City, but lost that one. But hey, he educated himself. Once again, education is another form of self-reparations. Josiah Henson, also known as Uncle Tom, but not in the negative light, he was an escaped slave, made it to Canada, helped organize a town there, helped organize a school there to teach escaped slaves, trades. And then later on, obviously, on a group economics level, he helped organize 400, and then he got another 400 acres for himself. right? Once again, none of that. And then the 21st example of what I consider self-remedies for reparations, okay? This is something that you, whoever you are in this listening audience, this is something that you can do right now in 2023. There were four, now the only thing that I disagree with Bob Johnson on audio, and I'm going to play it before I open up the phone lines one more time, is he said there were 3,000 black slave owners. There were actually, from my research, 4,000 black slave owners in the United States. Okay, Anthony Johnson was one of them. And he owned in excess of, I agree with him on this, 12,000 plus slaves. Many times they were slaves, I mean, members of their blood members that they got their freedom, so they had to go, you know, work and do whatever they needed to do. So you did have, and I'm going to do more research, because that's what, I'm looking at the Civil War a little bit differently now, because I'm sure some of these black slave owners, all right, because they're looking at, you know, quite a few of them have probably had plantations. But I got to do my research on that. So that's 21 examples of what I consider self-remedies for reparations. Now you can pick your flavor. I mean, we're in the age of comfort and convenience, so it's like reparations, the way I look at it, is like Baskin-Robbins. Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors. Now, they switch up their flavors throughout the years. They probably keep some basic stuff on hand year-round, like vanilla, chocolate, strawberry. But, you know, they mix it up on, you know, the variety of flavors. So Cheesecake Factory, you know, they got different flavors of cheesecake throughout the year. You know, they switch it up. They might have some, you know, the basic New York-style cheesecake, key lime, you know, cheesecake. My favorite, which is pumpkin cheesecake, but that's seasonal. You know, you can only get that, like, sometime in late September to, like, sometime in December. Then it's out of season. So reparations comes in many different flavors. So there are at least 30, what, like Baskin-Robbins, that 31 flavors. Well, let's say reparations, there are 31 flavors of that. All right. My favorite flavor is find you a do-it-yourself remedy that is that does have nothing to do with anybody's government. And go out here, and if it's land that you want, you can buy 40 acres to 4,000 acres to 40,000 acres. It's out here to get.
This is really good. So this is a black activist, I would say an activist who happens to be black, by the name of Bob Woodson, on the Dr. Phil show, talking about what has happened in the black community and how it relates to basically everything we're talking about here today.
You say you don't support reparations. Why not?
Not everybody suffered equally. I mean, when you go into slavery, it's much more complex than are white people were the oppressors and black people were the victims. If you dissect it, you will find there were about 3,700 free blacks who owned 12,000 slaves, black slaves. The question is, do the descendants of those free blacks who owned black slaves, do they pay? Blacks really benefited more the first 100 years after slavery than we have in the last 50 years. I was born in 1937 during the Depression. Everyone in my small, low-income black community, 98% of the households had a man and a woman raising children. Elderly people could walk safely in that community without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. Never heard of gunfire during that time. Never heard of a child being shot to death in the crib. But there are 50 children today who have been shot and killed in our cities. If you're talking about remedies, we've got to look beyond saying that every solution has to have a winner and a loser, that blacks can only benefit if whites lose. We have to be defined more than just victims of oppression. When whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best. When we were denied access to hotels, we built our own. We have to communicate to our people the history of how they achieved in the face of oppression. But if we continue to sit back and say all of the challenges that we face in out of wedlock birth, the violence, that somehow the control of that is in the hands of white America, and therefore until white people change, there's nothing that we can do. This sets up a terrible situation for this nation. The big crisis facing America is not racial. It is the moral and spiritual freefall that is consuming our children. The highest death rate among black families is homicide. Among Silicon Valley, the highest level of suicide, 6 times the national average. In Appalachia, there are prescription drugs. And so if we are to address this crisis that is causing our children to lack a sense of personal responsibility or value for their own life, they will take their own life or take someone else's. So in order to address that, we must come together and look beyond race and realize America is drowning because it's in a moral and spiritual freefall. None of us should be defined by the worst of what we were in the past, but we should be defined by what we want to become in the future, and that people are motivated to change when you give them a vision of victories that are possible, not constantly reminding them of injuries to be avoided.
What makes more sense? What that man is saying, or what you hear out of Lori Lightfoot, or Pete Buttigieg, or Joe Biden?
All right, now, an example, a more detailed example of what I consider, and once again, I'm looking at reparations just like Baskin-Robbins ice cream. There are no less than 31 flavors of ways you can get reparations. And the example I'm going to bring out here, and I mentioned Mount Bayou, Mississippi. We've had a couple of people. We've had two or three people over the years. Pleasant Stevens, his wife, she's from Mount Bayou. We had Delmar America. He's been on here at least two or three times. He's recovering from a stroke. He's doing very well, by the way. He's from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. He's back home in Memphis, Tennessee right now. And then we had another caller that called randomly from Mount Bayou some years ago. But the example I'm going to give right now from Mount Bayou is a guy who founded the town of Mount Bayou, Isaiah Thornton Montgomery. I'm reading this off of Wikipedia. Once again, his name is Isaiah Thornton and Montgomery. And what I'm about to read to you is his flavor of reparations, which you can still do today in 2023 and beyond. All right, Isaiah Thornton Montgomery, born May 21st, 1847. That was the sunrise sunset, March 5th, 1924, was the founder of Mount Bayou, Mississippi, an all-black community, although they do have some whites there now. All-black community, a Republican. He was Republican, okay, and I mean that in a good way, not in a bad way. He was a delegate to the 1890 Mississippi Constitutional Convention and served as mayor of Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Mind you, he did this during the Jim Crow era, all right? Now, and he didn't have a smartphone. He didn't have a tablet. He didn't have a desktop. No internet connection. He participated in the 1890 Mississippi Constitutional Convention as a delegate from Bolivar County in Mississippi and voted for an adoption of the state constitution that effectively disenfranchised black voters for decades using poll taxes and literacy tests as a test to raise the barriers of voter registration. Montgomery promoted the accommodationist position for African Americans. All right, let's see. All right, now, early education. All right, he was born into slavery. Isaiah was the son of Benjamin Montgomery, also who was a slave owner at one time. Joseph Davis, a brother of Jefferson Davis, promoted him to overseer. The younger Montgomery learned to read and write due to his father's influential position on the Davis-Bend plantation. Davis wanted to establish a more positive working environment for slaves and encourage education. All right. Following the end of the Civil War, the American Civil War, Isaiah began a business with his dad. It lasted until Ben's death in 1877. His father had a long dream of establishing an independent black colony, also another word for village or town. All right. By the time of his death, the Reconstruction era had ended, and African Americans struggled to maintain themselves against white supremacists. All right, let's see. After his father's death in 1877, Isaiah Montgomery worked to realize his father's dream. With his cousin Benjamin T. Green, he bought property in the northwest frontier Mississippi Delta bottomlands to found Mount Bayou in 1877. Once again, born a slave. Got his freedom legally during the Jim Crow era in 1877. He went out and bought land, over 500 acres of it. I think 565, somewhere around that number. All right. Bolivar County was the largest area in the Delta as farmers cleared land. They started cultivating cotton. Now that's one of their primary money makers. All right. He, once again, no internet connection, no electronics, nothing from the local government, nothing from the state government, nothing from the federal government. Do-it-yourself reparations. All right. And there are many cases. Like I said, right now there's about anywhere from 700 to 900 black townships that exist in the United States. You have black townships from Canada all the way down in Argentina. The entire Western Hemisphere. I haven't done the full count. I'm still on the United States part of it. But there's at least one I ran across in Colombia, at least one in Brazil that I've run across, because you got to. In certain cases, you have to learn the language, because a lot of this stuff is not written. You know what? Like they have black villages there over 100 years ago, 100 years old in Argentina. But in order to get that information, you're going to have to learn Spanish. They got them in every country in South America. They got them. You know, so essentially, if you're going to really knock out South America, you're going to have to learn Spanish, and anything that you want to get out of the Brazilian libraries on this topic is you're going to have to learn Brazilian Portuguese. All right? They've got black townships that were also established up in the northeastern parts of Canada, Newfoundland, those areas. And you might have to learn French to get that information, because so far I haven't found it printed in English. All right, so anyway, so this Mount Bayou still exists to this day. It's got over 1,500 people that live there. So anyway, I've just given you actually 22 basic examples of what I consider self-remedies on the group level. And hold on, let me look up one now. Isaac Montgomery, let me look up one more. Now, he got, that's the former. So if he got 500 acres during Jim Crow era, with no assistance from the government. Really, what do black people have to bitch about? Seriously. I mean, when it comes to, like I said, it, pick your flavor of reparations. He the same flavor that he picked, you can pick. Okay. I'm going to do one more before I go. Before I keep on saying that. Well, now I got to learn how to spell all over again. Okay. All right. I got to do a little math on this. You know, I like my numbers. Okay. Okay. Now, let's see. Okay, I got it. Okay. Let me see. Give me a minute here. I'm figuring out my statistics. So I can give it to you. Okay. All right, I'm almost here. Okay. Liberia. All right. Which I consider the second successful back to Africa trip. Those former slaves went over there. And actually, this is a combination of, well, now it's a combination of the people that went from Liberia and what do you call it, some other place. So they went. Now, we have people that in 2023, they're whining and bitching and complaining, we didn't get our 40 acres. So during the Jim Crow era, the former slaves that organized Liberia, they went over to Liberia, and they what we now call Liberia, and they purchased 27,520,000 acres of land and started that country. Once again, instead of waiting on the government to give them money, or instead of making an excuse that the white man's holding me down, which is really a lie, okay. Remember, we did a podcast a couple of weeks ago. Is it discrimination or is it competition? Okay. They went to an area where they had low or no competition, and they purchased 27 million. 520,000 acres of land. No internet. No cell phone. No desktop. No laptop. No tablet. No T-Mobile. No AT&T. No Verizon. No Comcast. No local government program. No state program, no FHA, no federal program, no VA. During the Jim Crow era, during the era of lynchings, but they didn't make no excuses. That's why I played the Jamarian Styles thing, the kid with no hands going out for the basketball team. And making it. And when he finally got in the game, he scored 6 points. You can't make money or you can't prosper and make excuses at the same time. It just doesn't work. So anyway, like I said, there are 31 flavors of there are probably 31,000 flavors of reparations. Pick one of them and work it. But I just gave you, let's see, the count's up now to about 23, 24. 24 different flavors of do-it-yourself and or group economics. The foreman of Liberia, the foreman of the Republic of Maryland, which is now Maryland County, Liberia, Republic of Maryland, or even Mississippi in Africa, they went out and bought 2 million acres of land. Anyway, okay. And in the future, we'll do Baskin-Robbins reparations. Pick your flavor and run with it. So you know what? Now, if you want to wait on the United States government or whatever, you know, Asheville, North Carolina, if that's your flavor, you know, that's your flavor. If some people like pistachio ice cream. I'm not a fan of it, but, you know, a lot of people like pistachio. So if you like pistachio ice cream or butter pecan ice cream or a sorbet, you know, whatever your flavor of ice cream, man, go for it. All right. And good luck to you. And, you know, let me know how that works out for you. But I'm just saying, look what else is on the reparations menu. I think you can get more traction if you look at the 31 plus flavors of DIY, do-it-yourself reparations. Because like I say, I mean, why go to the hospital for a cut finger? You know, just go in your medicine cabinet and get a Band-Aid. Okay, let's see. Area code 314, your mic is open.
Ellie, you see that image that I sent you?
Hold it. You texted it? Wait a minute. All right, hold on. I'm looking at it now. Yes, I am. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. This is from the FBI, these numbers.
Look at the age group between what, 15 and 24, I guess it is.
15 to 24, yeah.
And murders per 100,000 white males compared to black males.
All right, what I'm looking at, which is on the internet as well. This is from the FBI, and these murderers per 100,000 in the United States in the ages of 15 to 25, the murder rate for white males is 8.3%, and for Hispanic is 28.1%. This is once again ages 15 to 24, and then when we go to black male murderers per 100,000, man, this is off the charts. It's 207.4%. That's a real big jump.
Look at black females compared to white males. It's come on down.
Black females. Are double the rate, a little bit over double the rate of white males when it comes to, I guess, black females killing other black females?
I guess they're killing it.
It's 16.9, and, you know, that's very high.
Yeah, now what you're saying there is the face of crime. The face of crime when it comes down to committing murders is what color?
Well, according to these statistics, I can't argue with you. I didn't know the numbers were off the chart like this.
I've been telling you that for a while. And that was that year. It's worse now.
No, 2021. Yeah, 2021.
It's worse. It's worse now, 21, 22. It's worse now. So all those victims, who's going to pay reparations for them?
Very good point, because there's been injury in every one of those cases. So,
did you see the riots in Chicago?
Huh?
You see the riots in Chicago?
Yeah, those teenage kids, I heard a little bit about that. And
what
I listened to a little
kids?
Bit of the name of
wait a minute, wait a minute. What teenage kids? What's the adjective that's used?
You talking about black kids?
You were looking at, there you go, black teenagers. Black, and it wasn't just teenagers, because some of them were driving, so they had to be adults. It was black
right.
males and females. Who was it that jumped on the white? Who was it that attacked, so savagely attacked the white woman trying to go into her building? Did you see that clip?
I think I did. Was that the one when the woman spit on a little Pianchi?
Huh?
Was that the
one?
All right, I saw one. All right, I didn't see that video.
No, this is in Chicago with a group.
Okay.
Black male. And walked up on this woman, and all of a sudden, boom, they attacked her. Beat her. She was trying to throw her to the ground. And they on camera. Is that not a hate crime?
Yeah,
is that not a hate crime? Here they are jumping and savagely attacking this white female, throwing her to the ground. And she's screaming. That's what I'm going to tell females of all kinds, black, white, anybody else, you need to carry a weapon and start protecting yourself. So then when you see all this shit, this stuff going on, and you see the face of who's doing it, and elderly people are just scared to death, man. Even the Honorable Judge Joe Brown say that his home's been, I don't know if he still stay in that neighborhood, want to stay in the black community. His home was burglarized 6 times.
Mm.
Then you have this case where you have the black male go to the wrong house and ring the doorbell, and an elderly white man comes to the door afraid, and he shoots the guy. So who's the cause of
that case? Yeah, that is an interesting case, and that's trending. You're right.
Yeah, what helps to contribute that? It's fear. I would be fear, too. I go to the door, I got my gun. What helps to contribute to that fear that people have? You walking down the street and
the news, when they hear about, because after the guy got shot, it's a horrible thing that he got shot, but I understand what you're saying. He went to two other doors. And they couldn't help him, but you know, because you don't, you know, when that happens, you just don't know why is this person is hollering at you for somebody who's shot knocking on your door. But they, you know, they don't know
you're
what
right.
caused it. So naturally, people
invasion?
Like, right.
You see home invasions. You either had a food posing as Uber, black male.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see, you've seen so much of this, and you know people who have experienced these things. It's just like if you're out in the forest and you see a lion coming. You don't wait till the damn thing
right.
attack you. You're going to make you, I mean, you're just afraid. Fear is
right.
something else. Like you hear blacks say they're afraid of the police. Well, can't other people be afraid too or something? So
True.
These repercussions of these crimes are far reaching into not only into people's psyche. What did the mayor of Chicago say about those rioters acting like heathens? He comes talking about the lack of opportunities. It's so much crime in that city that big major companies like Caterpillar is even moving out. The maker of trackers, tractors and excavation.
Hold on a second. If you go to our Facebook page, everybody, and go to our Facebook page, which is a DIY Housing TV, DIY Housing TV, and I just posted the statistics from the FBI that Pianki sent me, and you can look them over yourself, and you can see the statistics that we're talking about. It's the first I just posted on that page. So, Pianki, continue.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not trying to, I'm just, you know, people talking about they would damage and eat and injure DIY housing, you say, home projects?
Yeah, DIY Housing TV on Facebook. I just posted the statistics that you sent me on that page.
I don't see your page.
DIY Housing TV. Well, it's there.
But, you know, I'm not trying to be right now the only one building here. Are the raccoons? Is that the one you get?
It should have the exact thing you sent me. I just posted.
Yeah, that's yours.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. You're at the right spot. Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's a shame. I mean, really, it's a shame, you know, that we have to put up this kind of stuff. But, I mean, that's what's going on. I'm going to try to send you a copy of the email of that poor woman getting beat up, attacked, man. I mean, it kind of reminds me of Lions in the Jungle when they circle an animal, a buffalo or a wildebeest, and all of a sudden they pounce on it. That thing is just totally, totally, totally different, man. So people that's talking about reparations, and you know, you talk about those back to Africa move. Those people were dead within a matter of months because of diseases and so on.
Yeah, many did die, and even if you brought this up before, even today.
Check
you know,
that video out on your Facebook page. That somebody sent me. Check that out.
Okay, wait a minute.
You
sent it, right?
I am. Yes, you are. No. Yeah, it's there on your. It's a Twitter link. It's there
email.
On your. It's on your Facebook page.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me go to that real quick.
Your house that you show in the background, it fits with that wooden deck, man. That's a lot of work right there. But you see it?
Oh, hold on. What did you post on the page?
DIV Housing TV page, Facebook. It's right beneath the lady that's standing there right now. The only ones building here are raccoons.
Wait a minute. I remember me posting that.
And I think I even sent it to you on your text.
All right, wait a minute. Raccoons. Let me refresh my page again. I'm not I'm scrolling, but I'm not running across it. I know what article you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the one that you just sent me to. Do a Facebook search, it takes you right to it. And also, I just sent it to you by email. Same link.
All right, let me see. Let me check the email real quick. Okay, now I got it. All right, Twitter, white feminists.
Looks like Facebook don't like them. Looks like Facebook won't.
I got it. White woman gets attacked by a large group of teens in Chicago.
Facebook won't let you do that. Twitter. So I hate Facebook for. They're always trying to.
Yeah, Facebook, they do censor, but I'm watching it on Twitter.
You see that poor woman, poor human being. And you wonder why come the FBI or the police authorities are not going by the facial recognition like they did with the January 6th protest. In D.C.
Boy, there's a lot of kids that's beating up this lady.
Those young men. And you can see their faces very clear.
Right.
Just from that one camera and the building and the cameras. So every one of them should be identified and rounded up and charged with a... Would you say that's a hate crime?
From what I'm looking at, it looks like a hate crime. This is ridiculous, man. These are mostly bored young men.
What color young
up
men?
On this lady.
Hmm?
Huh?
What's the skin color of the young men?
Everyone I see is black so far.
Yeah, they're black. Any other news service, like Black Information News, BIN, they always lead their stories talking about, like the young man that got shot at the house and said, white man shoots black boy, a black man. That's where they lead. So if it's okay for them to say it like that, it should be okay for everybody to make their description like that. I mean, it might be a white male, a white female jumping on Karen, jumping on some black female. I mean, you should lead. If you're going to do one, do them all.
Yeah, you have a very good, valid point. And this is horrible.
Well, absolutely it's horrible. It's just terrible.
He's somebody's mother. She could be somebody's grandmother.
You're absolutely right, L.A. It's just pitiful. It is just pitiful. And I don't understand.
I can't make the body count, but there's
in America,
there's at least 15, 20 kids that are. Oh man, I can't.
That's what you call a mob, man. That's what you call a mob, like in what was that city?
How bad she got beaten.
What was that city that they say that was burned down? Was burned down by who? Burned down by a mob, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's there. Well, you got at least 10 people there. 10 black males jumping on this one white woman. That's a mob.
I'm trying to find this woman who got beat up. Has anybody got a chance to interview her yet?
Oh, that woman's in the hospital, probably in a coma. Oh, by the way, you see this email I sent you about the stuff that's going on in Tennessee? Oh my goodness! Look at that! Look at this.
Okay, I'm looking at it now. Okay, Tennessee legislators. Sorry, let me.
Down below is a link. I mean, it's just so much going on.
Okay, video from. Okay, Tennessee 3. Representative Justin Jones attacking people in cars in 2020.
Whoa, wait a minute. Is that what you see in the video?
Oh, I just read the headline.
Check the video.
I'm looking at the video now.
What are they doing? They're trying to forcefully stop drivers on the interstate highway to get involved in their protest, but have sympathy for their protest. And what did they do to their one driver in the truck?
Well, they pushed. Hold on, I'm still watching.
It's so disturbing. It's very difficult to look at.
Well, let me post this one up.
What did you see?
Well, they were stopping traffic when they shouldn't have been stopping traffic, for one. And the way they were aggressively stopping traffic, 3, 4, 5 of them, they threw a traffic cone in one of the cars.
And the
commentator say, some people who might have had a gun
would have shot him, wouldn't
they?
You think they would have been justified in killing him?
In the situation I just viewed, yes.
And now he's a what? Justin Jones, a state legislator that attempted a insurrection of Tennessee General Assembly, him and Pearson. And you know that guy right there is actually a Filipino. He's Asian. And entering into the General Assembly with loud bullhorn, and they got expelled from the assembly. I think the assembly got a right to do that type of behavior. And what they hijacked a movement that was going on because of the school shooting, where the transgender person went in and started killing people, probably was on psychotropic drugs, in order to change her puberty blockers, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So the kid was protesting. I was in conversation with one on YouTube, and I asked her, what's the reform in police that you want to see? And she said that we don't get killed. So you don't have these civil rights dinosaurs and gatekeeping on hijack the movement. Here they are marching to the Capitol. You got other groups get in there, LGBTQ groups get in there, ideas. And they're going to go up into the General Assembly and scare and terrorize the legislatures where they have to be as police protection to get them out. That's a coup, man. That's an insurrection. Would you call it that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no news wants to call it that. Maybe it's because it's Democrats doing it. And you show a picture of the man where he was indicted, and I think they dismissed the charges after he viciously attacked that driver with that object called a barricade cone, threw it at him because he would not comply and stop and be a part of their shutting down, stopping, impeding traffic on an interstate highway.
Hmm.
Acting like black supremacists. Now, you couldn't talk about LA if it didn't happen, and apparently it did happen because you're looking at it.
Right.
It's being shown all over the place. So I just wanted to bring those out. There's more. That man deserved reparations. That white guy. This is 2023. Actually, it was 2022 when that happened.
Right.
I remember when they shut them out, you know. In Missouri, that's a felony. After the Mike Brown incident with BLM. But some people have privilege. And seemingly, they'll never get charged when they attack a certain other people.
Yeah, that's true.
That poor woman deserves restitution for each and every woman that was involved in that when and if ever they ever get out of prison. That's mob attack. That's mob violence.
Oh, yeah, she got mobbed. And we're talking about, like, she's from the – I just saw her face momentarily, but she looks like she could be somebody's grandmother.
And you,
mostly teenage boys, I hate to say it, black ones. Hey, nobody
saw
you. You're right. Nobody.
You see the other videos of them on top of a bus while some is down
and
in the bus.
Just from that video, that's that, you know, I'm not a mind reader, but some people, black or white, or whatever color, would be inclined not to answer the door if they saw a young, because that guy that got shot out in Kansas or whatever, he was the same age as all those kids that was beating up that lady.
Yeah.
So it's understandable.
That's in the back
if
of
somebody
his mind.
Is afraid to answer their door. Yeah.
Especially
you know what? I probably wouldn't open my door.
This man was 80 years old. Let's get back to the bus.
He's 84 years old. 84 years old. Okay.
How in the hell they get on top of the bus? I mean, you're on top of the bus while people, while some of the mob is in the bus, and guess what they're doing? Robbing people. In the bus. What did that remind you of? That reminds you of the Wild West stagecoach and train robbers.
Yeah.
There's so many we used to hear about that. Modern day passenger stick up kings. And that ain't the only time that this happened. Another case too where the black male got on a train and robbed the people. At gunpoint.
Well, the case of, if you remember, Bernard Getz in New York State, New York City,
yeah,
some years ago.
He had been robbed.
Yeah, he had been robbed by young black youth. So he went and got a gun. What happened to him again? So he pulled out the gun and right.
Yes, he was feeling threatened. He was afraid, L.A. And you know you got the
yeah,
community.
Yeah, that's where I got the gun.
commute in order to make a living, but he was afraid. And nobody paid him any attention, so he took matters in his own hands. You got an inalienable right to protect yourself, defend yourself. But anyway, I don't want to take up no more time. I just wanted to get that out so you can see it.
Well, I'm glad you did. And, you know, interesting thing about the Getz case, the guy who attacked, one of the guys who attacked him ended up suing him.
And that's sue him. He committed the crime against him.
Right.
He can be victim. That's something else. That's like the Central Park Five. And they did something. And they didn't have the DNA technology at the time, but the last time that they was going to try them again, the third time, DeBasquio said settle, a Democratic mayor, terrible one at that of New York. The prosecutors said, well, let's try it. Well, we got enough evidence to show that they were involved. Have you ever heard of the Forest Park Five? Forest Park is a park in St. Louis, where you had a white jogger that was attacked by five black males in Forest Park, St. Louis. Forest Park is a park in St. Louis. And that's one case. Another case where you had about three black males try to attack this white couple that was jogging in Forest Park. But the outcome was different. The male pulled a gun. That he protected himself and he killed her. Killed him. He was protecting himself and the lady that was with him. Because you have so many incidents of predators preying on people in the parks. And even at picnic benches. Can you imagine that? You're sitting at a picnic bench in the park trying to enjoy a meal and here comes somebody come up to you and rob you. Looking like the one that was in Chicago. Look at these incidents with the ex-soldier. When this idiot walks up to him in his car holding an AK-47. Well, you heard about that story. The ex-soldier killed him. He pulled his gun and fired on him. And then people saying, well, the criminal, he hadn't pointed his gun at him. He hadn't pointed the rifle at the driver. Well, L.A. You mean to tell me you're supposed to wait till somebody points the rifle at you, then the next moment they're going to pull the trigger and shoot you. So in that time, you got to go find yours for protection and then fire. You dead.
Correct.
And they talk about, well, he hadn't pointed the rifle at the driver yet. Like the case here in Atlanta not too long ago, where the black man comes home and get out of his car, and here comes three young black teenagers come up, they're robbing. But he was armed. He killed all three of them. And then you had idiots say, well, he didn't have to shoot him like that. So what the hell? You mean to tell me that today you're supposed to take a bullet before you can protect yourself further? Is that the way it's supposed to go?
No, I say protect yourself first.
Look, man, I'm going to let you go on with your show. Nice talking to you.
All right, well, we're wrapping up for today. Yeah, same here, Piyaki. We're wrapping up for today. Monday, we got Monday or two. We'll probably do it Monday. We've got what we're going to cover is, let me go to it real quick. Okay, let me As a matter of fact, hold on, Chris. Oh, let me go back to my studio real quick. Okay, let me, if Chris is still there. Yeah, we'll set this up for Monday, not Tuesday, but Monday. Hold it, Chris. My phone's repopulating. If you're still in the studio, I'm going to open up your mic as soon as your song refreshes. That's the word. Okay. Let's see. Okay, Chris, you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Good morning, fellas.
All right. Thanks for holding on. All right, Chris, you just sent me what are we covering Monday? For the audio you just sent me. I haven't listened to it yet, but that's based on the headline. I like it. And we'll cover
Monday.
Yeah,
they're pulling out all the stops here, I guess. And they Trump made a statement that you know, no person living in a municipality should have to worry about stepping over syringes or seeing a tent in public area. And they are going to, you know, it says when he's in office, of course, they're going to implement a get the people off the street movement. Now, they're talking about offering the services that we say that need to be met. Each individual person needs those individual services. And it does talk about that because what it says, though, is you're going to get an option. Everybody gets to make the choice. But they're going to make one of the choices for you. So the choice that you get to make is either you get help, you receive the help, or you go to jail.
Boom.
And it's a matter of fact that the jail is the number one thing. You're going to get a choice that you either go to jail or you receive help. They said every person in the United States should have, you know, a home to live in. And they will give you a cell as your house. That'll be your mailing address. But definitely, it was a very, very bold, you know, aggressive way to come out about combating homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what they're already doing. This is what I'm dealing with and what I've been dealing with right here in my city, because my city finds me a charity on a mission to try to get people off the street and safely feel secure, feel like they matter. And they fine me for it, and they want to throw them in jail. So that was the choice.
Right.
It was either I step up and help them or they go to jail. That was the only two choices there was. So you're getting basically the same choice. Now, I made a decision. I wanted to help.
Right.
Now, I'm taking the repercussions of that. So this is something that is already happening, you know, so, you know, people need to realize this is happening, but the very aggressive part of how that entire statement that is, that I shared with you is, I mean, it's the news. It's right there. You know, it's a bold statement, but it's not necessarily the right kind of statement to be making, because there was more push to the jail
right.
than it was an encouraging thing of let's pick each other up. you know, it wasn't about asking the community to do it. It's saying you're asking the government to take care of it. We're about to. Now, they're going to offer it to where we can have the services and have the funding to do the services and everything, because it's proven in that video, you know, he's stating that it's cheaper to give us the resources that we need to give the resources that everyone needs. It's cheaper to do that than it is to have people suffering. So it's cheaper to make them stronger. Every bit of the economy grows as soon as you start getting people being a productive person in economy. But right now, that this is, you know, it's something we need to be paying attention to, because how fast did last year go? To me, it went really quick. And now I'm looking at it that it's almost at the end of April.
Right.
And I'm watching this year fly by. And
it is.
I don't, all I know is every second that goes by, I know that a minimum of someone's home can be produced. Every second, right now, with our capabilities. So I want
to
see these seconds.
Chris, I'm reading some of this comments that are on this video. We're going to play this on Monday and do the entire thing on Monday on this video you sent. One of the comments says, he's right. I've lived at a homeless shelter in Los Angeles for about 6 months. I was working 9 hours a week at the homeless center where they let me sleep. Then they offered me a full-time job and promoted me 3 times in the same year, and I became supervisor for the family shelter. I served the families for 4 years and visited multiple homeless shelters and sites in Los Angeles. Later, a new director showed up and let me go. On the first day of work after a mission trip to Nepal to serve the folks affected by the earthquake, the director handed me a sheet of paper that said they were letting me go. Again, I was literally on the verge of homelessness. It was a painful experience. I lived with my relatives and drove Uber and Lyft to survive. It was hard. There are many homeless folks who desperately want to come out of that misery. Many of the corporations pretending to work for the homeless are not as serious to resolve the problem as they ought to be. For many of them, it is a business. Folks in higher positions are paid handsomely, but the real folks who work with the people every day, business lives suffer a lot, and there's no work security. He's got a pretty long, he's got some interesting comments on this video. But I know one stat I want to know is how many people out there living out of cars and vans? Because technically, they're homeless.
If you are on a couch, if you're staying at someone's house, you are homeless. So if you do not have a place of your own, you are homeless. If your name is not on a lease anywhere, you are homeless. If you live in a vehicle, you are homeless. If you live in a shelter, you are homeless. And you know, there's a category to that, all the way to a couch at a friend's house. It can be a family member's house. And technically, you fall under the category of homeless. And there is funds available to these organizations to get help. The difference is whether or not the organization truly wants you to get off the street. Because I've ran into that resilience. Not that they don't want to help you. They're scared of what's about they do make that transition. But, you know,
by stepping back and saying, I don't want to have nothing to do with any of it. Just try it. We succeeded. And you know what? They're no weaker than they were when they did that. They're actually stronger now. But they were able to help more people.
Right.
Now, how did they help more people? They didn't keep them down. They didn't work on the 15%. They went for 85%. Because I was like, if you don't do it, I am. Somebody's got to. But do it. You know, so they did. They got the money. They built the stuff. You know, they were able to, they got a national award in Peoria, Illinois in September of last year from HUD for helping more people in the community than they've ever helped before. There was only two awards given. That's what I was told. Now, out of 19,500 municipalities, you know, two, not a very big number, is it?
Right. No.
So we this is the problem that everybody needs to understand, that it's a proven fact that if you build up the community, the crime rate goes down. People, you know, they feel more joyful in life, and they don't necessarily see hurt. You know, someone in need. It's proven that these communities have changed. I know that I'm going to figure out what the name of that city is that's in Florida. And all I got to do is ask somebody that I heard it from. She was the contractor that built the 200 affordable housing units and wanted to know why. Why was she from Philadelphia? A big contractor in Philadelphia, down in Florida, building 200 units in this town, in this city, in this valley. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that there was across the street from them 200 units was a liquor store and a convenience store. I'm wanting to say those were the two things across the street. Nothing else. Now, in that same community, you don't see anybody on the street. No one. There's no homeless. And what's wild is even at night, though, it's so expensive to live in the city that people will come out of their houses. They'll come out of their houses and root through the trash to try to make it. But you don't see this on the street during the day. Only after people put their trash out at night. But people will come to their community and go through the trash. And I was pretty shocked to hear all of it. You know, but this was a reality of this week. You know, it was something else I learned. And I think I shared it the other day on the air as well. But this YouTube was yesterday, so thank you for letting me share that with you. I didn't want you to see it.
Okay. And then, like I say, Monday, we'll cover that. I'll have the audio loaded up as you sent it. And that will cover the whole, because that covers quite a bit. All right, thanks for that, Chris. On that note, everyone have a great weekend.